After over 100 years in Egypt, a time in which the status of the children of Israel went from guests, indeed welcome guests, under Joseph, the Israelites then left Egypt under the leadership of Moses, and they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. And this was a time of great trial and testing for the Israelites. But during those years, God fed them in the wilderness with daily manna. And by doing so, he reestablished for their mind, in their mind, the weekly Sabbath. That cycle was established firmly in their minds. And as you know, however, over the years, the people of Israel murmured, they complained, they remembered the many gods of Egypt, and they were aware of the pagan gods of the peoples around them. Nevertheless, even though they were aware of that and God had been taking care of them and keeping them safe, they still kept saying or chasing other gods besides the true God. Well, this story of the tribes of Israel was recorded in the first 5 books of the Bible. We also call that the Pentateuch, or the 5 books of Moses, and we refer to that as Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. As kids, our parents required us to learn all the books of the Bible. So my youngest brother, who was 4 or 5, he was watching the older siblings learn the books of the Bible. So he knew the books, and he could rattle them off, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and dance around with me. He had those down early. But this story continues on in the book of Joshua. And this story is about the children of Israel entering or going beyond through the wilderness, entering the promised land that was originally granted to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, we've already participated in the Spring Holy Days this year, following the Passover, the Days of Unleavened Bread, and Pentecost. And now we look forward to the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, and the 8th day, also known as the Last Great Day. And God gave us these biblical holy days to remind us of his plan of salvation for mankind. Well, for us that are here, well, this is old news. We already know this. But God knows that people tend to drift away from God when they're not tied closely to the annual holy days. Today, I want to draw parallels between the children of Israel's wandering in the wilderness and our marital lives and our spiritual lives. I want to focus on keeping spiritually strong by looking at the kingdom of God as a future marriage and helping us to avoid the things that cause us to fall out of love with God. So the title of this message is Things That Ruin Love. Things That Ruin Love. Now, it was almost 30 years ago that my wife and I were attending the Feast of Tabernacles in San Diego, California. We stopped to shop at a bookstore, the Crown Super bookstore. And at that bookstore, I noticed that there was a book on an end cap that was on display entitled His Needs, Her Needs. Well, I'm standing around, so I opened up the book. And then it had a dust jacket on it, and there was a picture of the author inside the back cover, and it looked vaguely familiar. So I looked at the author, and I read about, hey, he's the same area where I went to, in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, where I went to college. And I realized I recognized this fellow. His hair had turned white over the many years since I had seen him, and I was surprised to discover that the author was Dr. Willard Harley. He was my psychology professor in college. Well, I'm bumping into him thousands of miles away, at least at one of his books. And I realized I was one of his very first students shortly after he got his PhD, and he was a young professor. Well, I graduated from college and lost track of Dr. Harley. He went on to establish marriage counseling clinics around the region and then received national attention for his books, and indeed international attention. And he set up a website called marriagebuilders.com. And Dr. Harley explored the subject of why people lose love during marriage. And he has on his website, marriagebuilders.com, the concept of love busters. And I believe his book, His Needs, Her Needs, are also on the church's recommended reading list. I know that over the years, if I've had anyone come to me in regard to marital issues, I've generally referred to them the book, His Needs, Her Needs, or to the website, marriagebuilders.com, because they show an excellent values-oriented way for people to build and rebuild relationships. And if every married person or every person who intended to get married would read this information, their lives would be much happier. In Matthew 9:15, we read that Jesus Christ is likened to a bridegroom and we're likened to be a bride. In Matthew 9:15, can the friends of the bridegroom mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them and then they will fast, meaning do without. Well, in other words, people will do without. They won't have the spiritual food when the bridegroom isn't present. Now, Jesus was referring to himself and his disciples only having a short time on this earth together and referred to himself as a bridegroom. Now, and you stop to think of it, now, I've been on the earth a few decades, and I'm looking back, it seems like such a short trip. In fact, the Baptist evangelist Billy Graham in his 90s, they said, well, what offering of wisdom could you have or observation about life that you can reflect upon all of the years of life? And he said, the brevity of it. Well, the older we get, the quicker time seems to go, but it's because each year is a smaller percentage of our life. For a 5-year-old, 1 year is 1 year of his life. A 10-year-old, a year is 1/10 of his life. Well, when you get to be 90, 1 year is 1/90th. So it seems like a very different imagination of time. In other words, doing without. If we turn to Matthew 22, there's a discussion about a wedding feast and those who didn't show up for the wedding feast. And what did God do? He asked others to take their place for the ones that didn't show up. And our Christian life is much like being invited to a wedding feast. We can choose whether or not to answer the invite and attend the wedding. Now, in Matthew 5, we also have the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, and once again we have this analogy of joining the kingdom of God like being a wedding invitation to a marriage. In Matthew 5:1, then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. So this is an analogy that's drawn. Now, we spend a lot of time on details on how to get married, but we don't spend a lot of time on what to do after we get married. And exploring Dr. Harley's book and website, he has explained, as have other resources, that if people spent as much time planning the marriage and how to be married as they do planning their family vacation, both their family vacations and their marriages would be a lot happier. Well, we have this explanation that Dr. Harley gives about things that ruin love, and he calls them love busters. He explains that the list of things that people do in relationships cause them to lose love for each other. I'm going to use this organizational outline as we look at the children of Israel and our marital lives and our spiritual lives. And the first item that's listed by Dr. Harley is selfish demands. So, if you've been in church for a while, it's likely you've heard the story about Naaman, the head of the army in ancient Syria. And he had leprosy, and we read the story in 2 Kings. And Naaman had to go to Israel because he had heard there was a prophet there whose name was Elisha. And that way he could ask God to cure his leprosy. Now, Naaman was a very important man. He was close to the king of Syria, the head of the army, of course. And the king of Syria sent a letter to the king of Israel saying, please allow the head of my army to come over to your country so he can be healed. Well, that's sort of like today if you have the head of one country saying, I'm going to send my top military man. He's not coming there to spy or do evil. I just need some medical attention. In fact, you'll see medical attention of people all over the world going to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota because it's world renowned for certain things. And so oftentimes that's granted. Well, here we have one of these cases. So then Naaman, the Syrian army commander, asked the prophet Elisha what he could do for him after Naaman had been cured of leprosy. And Naaman offered gold and clothing, and he wanted to be able to pay Elisha for this wonderful miracle. And Elisha turned down the gifts because he said healing wasn't from him, it was from God. But Elisha had a servant, a helper, whose name was Gehazi. And Gehazi just stood there, and as soon as Naaman went down the road and left Elisha, he went chasing down the road after Naaman and said, oh, the boss changed his mind. I'd be happy to take your money and your clothing. Now, bear in mind, clothing was very valuable because until the 1700s, we didn't have commercial clothing production. It was all pretty much homespun, homemade clothing. So garments were very valuable. And Gehazi figured, well, if Elisha wasn't going to take the money, he could get a few bucks for himself. And 2 Kings 5:20, but Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, look, my master has spared Naaman, the Syrian, while not receiving from his hands what he brought. But as the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. Well, then we see what happened to Gehazi. He thought he was going to get something out of the deal, his own selfish demands. But what he earned for himself, as we read the story, is he was given the curse, the leprosy that had been on Naaman. Well, what brought this leprosy on Naaman? He brought it on himself. So the first item here, we look at selfish demands, as demonstrated by this example of Gehazi. Thought he would take advantage of a situation and serve himself instead of honoring God. Well, does that happen in our relationships, in our marriages? Do some people think that rather than serving God, they can serve themselves and overlook the important things in a relationship? Now, we can examine that, but more important than that, does the marital relationship we have mirror the relationship that we have with God? How are we looking at our potential marriage with Jesus Christ in the coming kingdom of God? Are we going to be a good spouse to our Savior? Not just a good bride, but a good wife. Would we be even wanted by the bridegroom? Would we be selected? Or would our selfish demands get in the way? Now, selfish demands certainly got in the way for Gehazi, and that example is recorded for all of us, because he thought he would heap to himself something else rather than honoring and respecting God. Well, the second item or second thing that can ruin love are disrespectful judgments. Disrespectful judgments. In Exodus 14, we have examples of the children of Israel in the wilderness. They've been in Egypt for over 100 years. They've had a lot of challenges, and they God freed them through Moses' leadership, but they were still very frustrated. In Exodus 14 and verse 12, is this not the word we told you in Egypt? Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it is better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. They didn't like Moses' idea about escaping Egypt and go out in the wilderness. Whoa, there's nothing out there. Also bear in mind, the mathematicians have calculated there could have been up to 2 million people in the Israelite tribe of Israel at that time. Well, where are you going to feed those? Where are you going to get the food and the water and so forth? There's no housing out there. They're exposed to the elements. Well, the children of Israel weren't happy following Moses. They said they'd rather be slaves in Egypt than be in a predicament in the wilderness. They weren't ready to follow God or God's servant. And then we go to Exodus 16 and verse 3. Exodus 16, 3, there's a couple of chapters later. And the children of Israel said, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. Remember what happened on that Passover? Everybody who didn't keep Passover or didn't have the blood on their doorposts, died. Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat and we ate bread to the full. You know, you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So they're blaming Moses and God. Now, this is a clue that they were hungry, but they had just escaped slavery in Egypt through a series of miracles. They weren't understanding the same God could certainly protect them in the wilderness. In Numbers 14, in verse 2, we similarly read in Numbers 14, 2, and the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said, that's a lot of people, the whole congregation, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we'd have died in this wilderness. What a terrible situation. You see, they weren't respectful of the relief that they had already gotten from the slavery in Egypt, and they were complaining about their woeful condition. You know, young married couples often start out with little or nothing. They decorate their homes with cast-off Salvation Army-type furniture, use a peach crate for a lampstand, and all of the other things. Usually don't have a lot. They're just happy if they have a roof over their head, a place to live, and food to eat. But then an amazing thing happens. Once their bellies are full, they begin to wish for more and more. And they often then blame each other for the things that they lack. Well, look what happened here in Numbers 20. Numbers 20, verse 4. Israel was sort of the same way. Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our animals should die here? In other words, what'd you bring us out here for, to die? Numbers 21, verse 5, rather. And the people spoke against God and Moses, why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For no food, no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread. They weren't happy with the manna. And apparently, they liked cold bottled water delivered to their doorstep. They didn't like it, how they were getting it at the time. But at this point, they were continually complaining to Moses and to God and disrespecting the decisions that God had made through Moses. As a result, there was a consequence for their behavior. In Numbers 26, verse 65. In Numbers 26, verse 65, for the Lord has said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. Ooh. In other words, he had had enough. You know what? They don't appreciate anything that I do. And apparently they're not willing to work for it on their own when I ask them to. He says, so there was not a man left of them except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. All of them died and their families. All of them died in the wilderness. Now, of course, there's more to the story. The spies that were sent out, and they rejected Joshua and Caleb's report. The children of Israel refused to go into the promised land. There was a consequence for their failure to trust in God. They were disrespecting the judgments of God, so they earned themselves a difficult future. They themselves chose that they would not follow God's way into the promised land. They rejected that, and so they wandered in the wilderness until they all died except for Joshua and Caleb and their families, who were able to go into the promised land. Well, what about our relationships? Do we have disrespectful judgments in our relationships? Do we think our mates are doing something that's not in our best interest? Is that our automatic response? Are we like Israel and think that we're getting dragged into a terrible predicament? Now, God had their best interest at heart, but they didn't see it. Do we give our mate that same credibility, that our mate has our best interest at heart? Or do we disrespect our mate's judgment when they're sincerely trying to help us? Now, to be fair, that's not true in every case. But similarly, what about our spiritual lives and disrespectful judgments? Do we do like the Israelites? Do we disrespect what God has in mind for us? Are we following his plan and then his expectations for us? When it says, many are called, but few are chosen, we have to choose to follow God. He looks at our hearts, at our actions, and decides whether to choose us then to be future priests in his kingdom. It is us who must choose to follow God. We also must avoid disrespectful judgments of our spouses as well as God. Things that cause us to do love, we've covered on selfish demands and disrespectful judgments. The third thing that causes us to lose love are angry outbursts. We have the occasion in which Moses is in the wilderness with the children of Israel, and it was a difficult time. And there was upwards of 2 million people, and they count that were actually thrust out of Egypt. And that takes a lot of food, a lot of water, and they were thirsty, they were crying, and their livestock were crying. I heard a loud noise this morning, a sheep bleating, bleating, bleating. And I said, I'm busy typing. I said, Lynn, would you just check? There's something wrong here. She goes out of the house and said, there's a lamb out. Can't get back in. So she opened up the gate and it ran back to Mama. Don't know how it got out. I went out, looked around the fence, but the livestock were crying. Generally, they cry if they're out of water or they want food, which is why I never feed them in the morning. Because if I fed them in the morning at first light, I would never sleep past the breaking of dawn. But in the evening, if they see my car coming up the driveway, we can hear the welcoming committee of the sheep wanting the nibbles on the grain. The children of Israel were crying out for water. They blamed both Moses and God. In Numbers 20, verse 11, Moses had an angry outburst. In Numbers 20, 11, then Moses lifted his hand, struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and the animals drank. You see, on the surface, it doesn't seem like it's a big problem. We had that sermon around Pentecost time. In Psalm 78, in verse 20, in Psalm 78, behold, he struck the rock, so the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. Then there's a question. Can he give bread also? Can he provide meat for his people? In other words, is this all Moses is doing? Wait a minute here. So the problem is Moses took it upon himself as if he had done it and not as the servant of God. Moses was frustrated and had an angry outburst, although God still affected the outcome and provided the water. It was Moses that called his attention to himself as if he were the one that had the power to do so. That's why the psalmist writes, can he give bread also? Or is he the one providing manna? Well, of course, Moses was not. When we read, can he provide meat for his people? We read in this saga that the Bible gives us, flocks of quail came in the wilderness to feed the children of Israel. Moses didn't do that. This is calling the attention to the fact that God is the one that does the provision. We'll see what the consequences were for Moses' angry outburst. Now, I might mention here that it's hard to imagine that this was the only time in life where Moses had an angry outburst. But bear in mind, Moses spent 40 years in Pharaoh's court and in the Egyptian army. 40 years in the wilderness with his Jethro and his father-in-law, raising a family and becoming a shepherd. And then after 80 years old, for the next 40 years, in the wilderness with the children of Israel. So, and while he was in the wilderness, what happens when Moses came down the mountain after he received the etching on stone of the Ten Commandments? And he discovered the golden calf and the people had been led astray. He had an angry outburst and he threw down the stone tablets and broke them. And because he got upset, the tablets had to again be carved out of stone. We read in Deuteronomy 32, verses 48 through 52. We read the consequence of what happens when Moses had his angry outburst. And we read this circumstance, and we jump down to verse 51. Because you trespassed against me among the children of Israel on the waters of Meribah, Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin, because you did not hallow me in the midst of the children of Israel. Verse 52, you shall see the land before you, although you shall not go there into the land which I'm giving to the children of Israel. No, Moses could see it when he went up the mountain. He could see where he could have gone. But this sudden outburst in which Moses had directed attention to himself, as if he were doing it, providing the water and so forth, had a consequence. Moses could not go into the promised land and would not lead Israel into that promised land. So now let's look at our marital lives. Do we have angry outbursts there? How good of a bride would we be? If Jesus Christ said something and we weren't fully happy with it, would we strike the rock as Moses did? Would we do this in any other situation? Because our marital lives are a model of how we need to be in the kingdom of God. How about our spiritual lives? Are we frustrated because God doesn't deliver everything on a platter when we want, how we want it, and in a manner we want it, and to the fullness that we want? Of course not. Now, bear in mind that any time we're talking about humans and marriage, it works both ways. You've got to have cooperation on both sides. If you don't, it's not like our relationship to Jesus Christ that we can say, well, we're going to point out the failures of Jesus, and that's why we're acting this way. It doesn't work that way. We can do that with humans. So the first three issues that we looked at today, selfish demands, disrespectful judgments, angry outbursts. Well, there's the fourth characteristic that causes us to lose love or ruin love, and that is annoying habits. We all know people who have annoying habits. Don't ask my wife about mine. Unfortunately, the children of Israel had many annoying habits, and they've recorded those annoying habits are recorded for our benefit. Now, I mentioned earlier about the spies that were sent out to spy out the land of Canaan in Numbers 14:36. And as we know, there were 12 spies sent out. 10 of them came back with a bad report. Well, that seems to be standard operating procedure for the Israelites, to find something to complain about, even when there's something good in their immediate future. It happens that way in relationships, too. Some people look and they're looking for something to complain about, even when good things are happening. If you go to Strong's Concordance and look up the word complain, or you type it in on any online Bible, you'll see how many times that the children of Israel were complaining during their wandering in the wilderness. And it had to be really annoying when it happens over and over again. Now, we know when Joshua was the leader to follow Moses and led the children of Israel into the promised land, in Joshua 18 and verse 3, Joshua and Caleb, remember, they were the spies many years before, and so they knew what had happened when the children of Israel rejected the chance to go in. In Joshua 18, verse 3, that Joshua said to the children of Israel, "How long will you neglect to go and possess the land which the Lord your God of your fathers has given you? Here we are, 40 years have passed, and they're ready to go into the promised land, but they're still reticent." And Joshua still has to say these words, "How long will it be?" In other words, are you going to do this all over again? And it seems sometimes we annoy our mates over and over again for a long time for the same thing. Now, I'm uncomfortable with the thought myself, how long I've annoyed my wife. So we'll just won't need any of those examples. We'll just pass on those for now. Perhaps someday she'll forget them. But what if we heard those words from our mate? How long will you blankety blank, 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 fill in all the blanks? Now, whatever it happens to be, let us hope that we all try to mend our ways, move on, and not be like the children of Israel. So we must ask in ourselves, are there things that we're neglecting to do? Because every time we do them, our mates might lose some of the love they used to have when we got married. Well, what about our spiritual lives? Can we say, as we read in Joshua, how long will you neglect whatever it is to do something that's spiritually beneficial for you. Even if you can't see it for yourself right now, but it's maybe laid out for you and it's given as a choice for you. So we have to learn, understand, and follow through on what is spiritually beneficial for us. And that's why we have weekly reminders, annual holy days, where we have opportunities then to make course corrections. So the fourth thing that erodes love, we would call annoying habits. So we've got selfish demands, disrespectful judgments, angry outbursts, annoying habits. Well, the fifth thing that erodes love is independent behavior. Independent behavior. Now, this one is actually a sermon all by itself, but I'm not going to refer to all the examples given today, but there is a verse in the Bible that summarizes it up quite nicely in Jude chapter 1, verse 11, in Jude 1:11, about independent behavior. Here it says, "Woe to them, for they've gone the way of Cain, have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit, and perished in the rebellion of Korah." Well, the context here is that Jude is talking about false ministers, but you know, it could really apply to all of us. If we go through and do a case study of Cain, we found out he wanted to worship God in his own way. He wanted to do his own thing. He would honor God if it could be in the way he wanted to do it. And then there was Balaam, who wanted to prophesy his way, even though it was difficult to do, and God had to correct him. Then we can read up through the history of Israel in the wilderness, the rebellion of Korah and the children of Israel is an example of wanting to do things our own way. They didn't want to listen to the prophets of God. Each one of these is a story in itself, and it's worth doing some research on. Well, what about our marriages? Do we have situations where each mate wants to do his or her own thing and go their own way independently? In Amos 3 in verse 3, can two walk together unless they're agreed? Seems pretty simple, yet how hard is it to agree with someone else unless they want also to agree with you? Marriage is a partnership where they both must work together if there's going to be a successful relationship. Well, isn't it the same way with our spiritual lives? Can we walk together with Jesus Christ as our future bridegroom? But we can't unless we're in full agreement with what he taught. As the bride of Christ, are we willing to follow his way and submit to his life and lessons? Can we follow the conduct of Jesus Christ so that our mates will then desire to follow our good example? Well, I rarely ever quote Frank Sinatra in a sermon, but there is an interesting song, some of you may recognize it, and surely you've heard of the song My Way. It's a popular but very old song. And I will quote it here. "For what is a man? What has he got? If not for himself, then he has not. To say the things he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blows and did it my way." Well, are we going to do it like Frank Sinatra and do it my way? And not like the words of the one who kneels? This is kind of a slap or a blatantly written into the words there, because who do you think who kneels? It's someone who honors God. Well, it's the same way in our marital lives. Are we willing to walk with our mate as a partner? Are we willing to look at them as being a potential partner in a marriage with Jesus Christ? Or do we want to do like Frank Sinatra or Cain or Balaam and Korah, who each did it my way? So far, we've looked at selfish demands, disrespectful judgments, angry outbursts, annoying habits, and then independent behavior to look at things that ruin or erode love. The sixth thing that erode loves is dishonesty. Now, dishonesty can take many forms. Perhaps we've read this verse from time to time in Malachi 3, verses 8 and 9. "Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, in what way have we robbed you? The answer is in tithes and offerings, Verse 9, you are cursed with a curse, for you've robbed me, even this whole nation. So it wasn't just one person. It was many people who weren't respecting the expectations laid out by God. In 1 John 2, in verse 4, there's a consequence. 1 John 2, 4, he who says, I know him, and does not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. If we claim to be followers of Jesus Christ, and we don't do what Jesus Christ says, well, then we're called liars. Well, then you say, well, so what? In John 8, starting in verse 42, in John 8, verse 42, and Jesus said, if I were your father, you would love me, for I proceeds forth, and for I proceeded forth and came from God, nor have I come of myself, but he that sent me. Why do you not understand my speech? Because you're not able to listen to my word. If you go on to verse 44, you're of the father, the devil. These are his challengers. And the desires of your father you want to do. He, meaning Satan, was the murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. In Revelation 21, verse 8, then we read the consequence of not telling the truth, of being dishonest. In Revelation 21 and verse 8, but the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. So there's a consequence for dishonesty. There is a heavy cost if you're dishonest, frankly, with yourself. And if you're dishonest with yourself, you can't be honest with God. You can't be honest with your mate. And the expectation is, of course, that we'll be truthful and honest with our mate in order to practice being truthful and honest with God. You see, all the things that erode love, Dr. Harley called these things love busters, have a consequence. We can read about the consequences in the places in the Bible where God was frustrated with the children of Israel because they were practicing the love busters, the things that erode love, and frustrating God a great deal. So he allowed them to earn their consequences. In Deuteronomy 1, starting in verse 34, in Deuteronomy 1, 34, and the Lord heard the sound of your words and was angry and took an oath saying, surely not one of these men of this evil generation shall see the good land which I swore to give to your fathers. Well, that was, of course, the time when the spies were sent to Canaan, and the spies came back with a bad report. They should have been giving a good report, like Joshua and Caleb. But none of the men of that evil generation would see the good land that God had sworn to give to their fathers. We read on in Deuteronomy 1 and verse 36, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he shall see it, and to him and his children, giving the land in which he walked, because he wholly followed the Lord. And we read on, as well as verse 38, Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, shall go in there. And it says, because they were honest. They gave a report, and it was a good report. And then, if we jump down, verse 41, and then you answered and said, oh, we've sinned. We will go up and fight just as the Lord our God commanded us. And when every one of you had girded up his weapons for war, you were ready to go up to the mountain. Now, they didn't realize the consequences were going to be bad. So they said, oh, no, I didn't realize it was such a bad thing to be so that there would be such blowback. And after they got the death penalty, all of a sudden they decided to be repentant. It was a pretty good idea now that they realized they weren't going to go to the promised land. All of a sudden they said, now they're ready to strap on the weapons and go. And we read in Deuteronomy 1, down verses 42 through 44, and the Lord said to me, tell them, do not go up nor fight, for I am not among you, lest you be defeated before your enemies. verse 43. So I spoke to you, yet you would not listen, but rebelled against the command of the Lord and presumptuously went up into the mountain. And verse 44, and the Amorites who dwelt in the mountain came out against you and chased you as bees do. In other words, when God wasn't, when they abandoned God, God wasn't going to protect them. He had removed his protection. And then said the Amorites chased them like bees. I don't know if you've ever been chased by bees. I've had that experience. It was on the farm many years ago, about 25 years ago. And I had a steel fence post that was a marker. I had pounded it in. I put a bright yellow 2.5 gallon jug on it, easy to see. And it was marking a drainage tile intake. Didn't want any machinery to hit that spot. Well, somebody operating a machine hit the post, bent it over. And so I went out to the field in my pickup truck. I'm going to put in a new post so it's nice and straight. And the next person that comes by will be able to see it so they wouldn't smash into it. Now, it was a hot day. It was a summer day. And I was wearing a loose shirt. Shirt tails were out. And so I went out to put in the new post and off the bent one. So I took this jug off the post, threw it on the ground. And that's when I discovered that a whole bunch of wild bees were living in that jug. It was a perfect place for them. And they came swarming out. And because I was wearing a loose shirt with the shirt tails out, six bees got under the shirt. Right there in the belly, right in front of me. Now, let me tell you, you cannot run fast enough to run from a hive of bees. And they're very upset that I just ruined their hive and threw it on the ground. And so if somebody would have had a video camera that day, they would have had a bestseller because they would have seen me out there dancing the jig in the field all alone for no apparent reason and then running lickety-split across the field, flailing away with my hands, beating on myself, trying to smash the bees. Now, so when I read the verse, I thought, and it chased you like bees, meaning there's no logical thought. I'm going to wait around and think about what's the best thing to do. It was just get out of there. It's not something you easily forget. In Deuteronomy 1, continuing on in verse 44, then you returned and wept before the Lord, but the Lord wouldn't listen to your voice nor give ear to you. In other words, it was too little, it was too late. We continue to see then in generations after this, the Lord continued to practice or Israel continued to practice what Dr. Harley calls love busters. Instead of drawing close to God, they drew away from God, and it came to the point there was a consequence. In Jeremiah 3 and verse 8, Israel was called backsliding. Then I saw that for all the causes for which the backsliding Israel had committed adultery, meaning chased other gods, I had put her away and given her a certificate of divorce. Yet her treacherous sister Judah did not fear and went and played the harlot also. They were chasing after false gods. They weren't developing a relationship with the true God. They were not faithful to their mate. They went elsewhere and earned a consequence. So finally God said, this is it. This is enough. Just like the Israelites learned earlier, time is up. It's over. There's a consequence. And if we want to really read about the consequences listed in the Pentateuch, we can read in Deuteronomy chapters 27 through 30. Now you want to put your seatbelt on when you read that because it's pretty rough. And I'm not going to go through all of those because we'd be shaking and crying by the end of those things. But in those chapters, there's a list of curses that mankind brings upon themselves for failure to listen to God. People think they have a better way. They want to do it, hey, Frank Sinatra's way. What about in our marital lives? Do we do it this way? Can we expect the same consequences and the same curses and the same difficulty? I talked to a fellow one morning who was dealing with the curses in his own marital situation. It was very awkward. It's difficult. But you can go down the list of curses, and he was suffering that whole list of curses that you see. And But for him, it was different, because rarely do I hear this. He said, you know, I've figured out why this is happening to me. I have to learn these lessons and make better choices for myself. Wow. How many people say, I'm learning from this terrible lesson? And he's right. He was turning the corner, learning the lessons, and moving into the future. We can read about our own destiny in Revelation 19:9. Revelation 19:9. Then he said to me, write, blessed are those who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he said to me, these are the true sayings of God. Well, what a delight it is to be called to the marriage supper of the Lamb, the wedding with Jesus Christ. And if we back up a couple of verses in Revelation 19 and up to verse 7, there's the question for us today. Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. Well, the next thought is, have we made ourselves ready for the destiny that Jesus Christ has placed before us? Have we made ourselves ready by practicing what we must practice in our marital lives and our spiritual lives, and by learning the lessons of ancient Israel, by avoiding the things that cause love to erode, also called love busters? So do we avoid selfish demands and replace it with consideration for each other? Do we avoid disrespectful judgments? Or do we pause and reflect before condemning? Do we avoid angry outbursts, or do we seek gentle communication and seek to understand? Do we avoid annoying habits and replace it with being conscious of how our actions affect others? Do we avoid independent behavior and instead agree to share in decisions? Do we avoid dishonesty, or are we honest with ourselves and our mate? Well, as we progress in our Christian life, let's focus on keeping spiritually strong by looking at the kingdom of God as a future marriage, and let this understanding help us to avoid the things that cause us to fall out of love with God and each other. So let's draw close to God by avoiding those love busters. Let's avoid the things that ruin love.